This is The Science Show on ABC Radio National and online through abc.net.au/rn. And they were talking about arid South America just then. Paulie Newman is actually based in the desert in Phoenix, Arizona. And all around in the Red Hills you can see cactuses 3 metres high and going on apparently forever. And this is the desert that Professor Ferran Garcia Pichel is working on at Arizona State University.
Yeah, we do. But essentially, if you walk in the right direction and you don't hit one of the sprawl areas that we have around the valley, then you may find those beautiful Sonoran desert landscapes you're probably talking about. And we do actually go often on hikes and walks on the desert. That's something we like to do, at least in the wintertime, not so much in the summer. But unfortunately, I can't tell you very much about things up high like magnificent saguaro cactus and things like that, because unfortunately I mostly go looking at the lower parts because that's what my interests lie. I like soil bacteria, and so I find, my wife tells me this, can you stop looking down on the ground? But that's what I do. I walk the desert and I look down as other people, you know, look up.
Well, I must say, if you do look up, the views are sensational. Mm-hmm. And as far as the eye can see, these are amazingly huge cactus, on and on and on and on forever. But the point about the desert is its scale, and so I find it astounding that you say that the crust of the desert itself is being affected so profoundly by humans and the interaction. Could you tell me how it is?
Well, if we looked from a bird's eye view, we would see that actually most of the ground is not covered by plants. We see them because they stick out. But most of the surface of the desert is actually bare, even in a relatively luscious desert like the Sonoran Desert. And most of this area that seems to be covered by nothing is actually covered by microbes. So in a way, they're cryptic organisms, not only because they're small and so on, but also they don't stick out of the ground. And yet, when you look at those organisms on an aerial basis, then you realize how important and how much coverage they have.
Is it any different from a normal soil, which also has huge numbers of bacteria and microorganisms?
Yes, it's very different. Here's the main difference is, in a regular soil, most of the bacteria in the soil do one thing. They are there to take care of the plant litter that falls into the ground and to chew that organic matter. In so doing, they, of course, have a beneficial effect in recycling the nutrients and providing nutrients to plants and so on. In the desert, however, plants are really not there. That's the definition of a desert. They're in low numbers. The microbes in the soil, then, they have to be their own producers. So we get a different set of organisms in those arid soils. Same here in Sonora as in the central deserts of Australia. They're covered by a special type of organisms that can use light just like plants. They produce the organic matter that otherwise would be in the form of plant litter, and they support the whole miniature ecosystem that constitutes what we call a desert crust. So essentially, it is probably, in a way, a remnant of what soils on Earth would have been before the advent of plants.
It could also be the sort of thing that we're looking for, who knows, on Mars. You never know.
Sure enough, that's one of the things that, yeah. As people think of the evolution of water on Mars, the idea is that water was much more abundant than it is today at some point during planetary evolution of Mars, and it became more and more scarce. Essentially then, the latest microbial communities that must have been on the soil on Mars would have been very similar, if they were there, than what we find today in deserts. So in my opinion, if we're looking for fossils of past life on Mars, that would be a very good target.
Isn't that interesting? Because there's also those extremes. You mentioned, the extreme of temperature on Mars goes from minus 100, 120 to plus a few degrees. Here in the desert, it gets so hot in the summer that you all leave, doesn't it? How hot does it get?
Well, so a typical soil can get really up there 75 degrees C easily on a sunny day. And most microbes couldn't care less. They can take it as long as they are dry. Most of the soil organisms do not seem to suffer under the extreme temperatures that the soil gets when the sun's out. At the same time, in the winter, it can freeze, right? So you have these temperature extremes. Another thing that's very important is insulation. The amount of light that shines on the surface of the soil, including the ultraviolet radiation and so on, particularly when the cells are dry and are not really active, they're just in a state of suspended animation, waiting for the next rain to become happy and alive, and they're still being insulted by this radiation, by erosion, by wind-driven particles, and so on. So it's really a very tough organism. And that's particularly one of the aspects that I think has been very rewarding for my research, is trying to figure out what adaptations, what tricks these microorganisms have come up with in order to survive these very extreme environments. And we've been quite successful at sort of finding a couple of their tricks.
Tell me what they are.
Well, so for example, I started actually as a graduate student, and that was the major theme of my PhD thesis, which was realizing that some of these organisms looked very dark when you look at them in the microscope. And so one thing led to another, and we actually discovered that they use sunscreens. They produce certain compounds, just like we would put on our own sunscreen to go into the sun. And some of these compounds are extremely powerful secondary metabolites that have found application in medicine, for example, as anti-inflammatory compounds, as anti-cancer compounds, on top of being very successful, very stable sunscreen compounds. So that has been an unintended side project that we have been pursuing. It's not so much ecological as the rest that we do, but it's very interesting because it also allows us to tell people and to educate people in saying, see, we really didn't set out to do this. We just set out to increase our knowledge about the world we have around us. And this is what we stumbled upon. And we don't necessarily to all do applied research. That's what most people would say. You know, what's the application? What's that good for? Right? And then you say, well, it's good for nothing yet. But it pays to have a little bit of awareness about the possibilities.
So that was one lovely serendipitous discovery. What about the other trick that you were going to tell me?
Okay, so another interesting trick that we discovered was that people think about bacteria just being agents of biochemical adaptations, but that's not quite true. They also show behavior. And one of the discoveries that we made was that certain organisms in the desert can actually sense when water is becoming scarce and respond to that drying of the surface of the soil by diving deeper into the soil, so that once the soil becomes dry, then they are desiccated, they can't be active, but they have found their resting place in a sort of refugium from these very harsh environments. So actually, we discovered, so far it was the first time that it has been shown for any organism of any kind, something scientists called hydrotaxis, the ability to respond by moving away or towards concentrations in water activity.
That's very clever of them. It's almost like a sort of hibernation and waiting till it improves.
Exactly right. They go to their den.
they go to their den. Interesting, isn't it? What about the impact of people on this wonderfully subtle ecology that's on the surface crust of the desert? Surely the desert is so big that we hardly made any impact at all.
Well, that's not quite true. Besides playing a role in the fertility of the desert, these very tiny, very cryptic microbial communities or crust, they play a very significant role in preventing soil erosion. You know, the role that plants take in temperate environments, it's taken here by these small filaments of bacteria that sort of weave the sand particles together into a very crusty mesh that's very tough. It can resist very, very high wind speeds, hurricane force, and not be bothered by it. So we have a natural way for the desert to preserve the soil surface against mostly wind-driven erosion, aeolian erosion, but also water erosion. And as I mentioned, these crusts are very tough against wind, but they are not very tough against compressive forces. Like any crust, it's brittle like a cookie. If you press it, it will crumble. And so do these when they're compressed. And so they are relatively easily damaged by physical trampling, by either walking, by cows or cattle trampling on the crust, by outdoor vehicles. So actually, agriculture, pretty much all the human activities that we associate with living in the desert have a detrimental effect on these crusts. And the problem is, of course, people are not very aware. You know, everybody's probably very aware of the need to preserve the panda bears because they're cute. But microbes are not necessarily cute. So people are not naturally inclined to think positively about preserving a microbial community. Human activity essentially can destroy easily the natural crust cover, and that's the main problem, of course. But the second problem is that these organisms that I mentioned before, most of the time they're doing nothing. They're just sitting there waiting for the next rain. They can start living their lives. That means that there's very few periods of growth during the year. And that means the recovery of any destroyed crust is going to be very slow. It has been shown by colleagues of ours up in the state of Utah that some of these crusts can take hundreds of years to recover fully. So essentially, it's a serious problem that doesn't have an easy remedy. And then, perhaps not coincidentally, in our area of Phoenix, Arizona, the major source of pollution is actually dust pollution. And that's because in order to find good, well-developed crusts around the city of Phoenix, you really have to resort going to one of the Indian reservations where there is no activities. Everything else is practically gone.
And dust is a problem, dust storms.
Dust is a very serious problem. Dust storms are much larger than in the past, of course, since human activity. And particulate pollution is probably number one source of pollution for the state of Arizona.
I remember reading Steinbeck's work, you know, about Oklahoma and the gigantic dust storms which ruined the lives of people. Anything on that scale? Yeah.
Well, not in that destructive scale, because fortunately or unfortunately, we are replacing the natural crust with pavement. That's what we're doing here. So that has, of course, other unintended consequences, like raising the nighttime temperatures of the city, but that's a different problem.
Makes you wonder about all those huge dust storms we're having in Australia, doesn't it? Professor Ferran Garcia Pichel at the Arizona State University.
Thank you.